Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Right, let's do this.
Right. Hello, I'm Simon Mercer. Welcome to Crave, the podcast dedicated to film and to music and to movies, to television, just about anything that's been entertaining me and Steve McCabe over the last little while.
And this week, New Zealand writer, director, actor, is there anything the man doesn't do? Taika Waititi steps out of the shadows and into the international spotlight with the release of, I mean, this is by far his biggest release, isn't it? Thor Ragnarok. I hope I pronounced that correctly. I think you have to say Thor Ragnarok. I think that's the improved pronunciation. The latest. I mean, it's the very latest in an extraordinarily long line of superhero films from Marvel, isn't it?
It sure is. Also, we joined the good folk of Auckland who ventured willingly into the nightmare of Alice Cooper. At least that's what the veteran rocker promised was going to happen to us. Did he deliver? Steve and I shall discuss this soon.
And another rock veteran. I don't know what's my place in my script here. This is terrible. Another rock veteran, this time with a connection to Thor Ragnarok, by the way, has just released a new album. Robert Plant is back with Carry Fire.
So, Steve, you know, there have been so many, and we've talked about them, haven't we? There have been so many of these Marvel films in recent years. Gosh, you'd be forgiven for reacting along the lines of, oh, ho-hum, here's another one, when a new release comes along. But in this case, it's one called Thor Ragnarok, and this is the third standalone Thor film put out by Marvel.
The third?
Thor the third, yes.
Thor the third.
Say that in a hurry.
So is Thor the third Thor film?
That's correct.
Excellent. We could do this all day, couldn't we?
Why not?
but anyway. It's not just any old Thor film, though, is it? It's something a little bit special. In particular, I'm going to count myself as a Kiwi here because, you know.
I think you should.
Because you guys were tolerating me for long enough that I feel like I'm one of you. And so it's got our very own Taika Waititi. He of Boy, What We Do in the Shadows, Hunt for the Wilder People. Marvel have decided that they wanted to actually have a director who's going to stamp some serious individual style onto what, let's face it, is becoming a somewhat crank 'em out kind of film factory. Yeah. And so now we've got Thor Ragnarok, the latest edition of the saga. Oh God, it's a hell of a saga, isn't it? The Norse god. Oh, they just get demoted at one point. The Norse god of thunder. So, yes. Simon, what do you reckon?
Well, it's really, and this is a very interesting, not just from the sort of the point of view of, you know, we're New Zealanders and we want to support our local lad, but he is known, there's no doubt about it, he's known and he's demonstrated a quite a quirky and this irreverent, inventive sense of humour. And is this film full of it? It sure is. Absolutely it is. I enjoyed it a heck of a lot. It's just pure escapism, pure entertainment, lots of laughs, lots of action. I've got a question, though. I enjoyed it a lot, as I say, but Steve, I couldn't help thinking from time to time as we were going, working our way through this film, was it almost too frivolous or maybe even too silly for some? I found myself wondering, how will this go down, this particular Kiwi type of humour in the international marketplace? Did you have a thought on that?
Well, I have to say, this is the most Kiwi concern about a film imaginable. How will the world handle little old New Zealand?
That's right.
And the truth is that I saw this in my local cinema in Pukekohe here, and the bloke sitting next to me, it was just, Mr. New Zealand, total Kiwi. And he howled with laughter all the way through it. He was clearly having a wonderful time. He was really enjoying this film.
Yes.
On the way home, I was talking to Debbie, who, although she now lives in New Zealand, as I do, is American. And I was saying to her, you know, it's like, this is supposedly got a very, very New Zealand feel to it. And she said, what was so Kiwi about it? And I said, it takes nothing seriously.
Yeah.
No one's ever allowed to get too full of themselves. For every great, big, overblown, puff your chest out, and here we see the thing of the whatnot with the great big sword of eternity, then suddenly someone has to bring it down. yeah, but it's not really that big of a sword, is it? There's always a little bit of a pull back down, isn't there?
Yes, yes, there is.
No one's ever allowed, and this is very, very Kiwi, no one's ever allowed to get too up themselves, even if you're the god of bloody thunder. You still have to remember your place. So for all the times that he's the god of thunder, he still sort of trips over himself and can't quite pick things up properly without dropping them, and he fumbles things, and that humour permeates the entire film. Nobody's allowed to get too up themselves.
No, I think it's a good way to sum it up. It's non-stop. I thought that it's not just a Kiwi humour, particularly in the way in which Waititi himself, Steve, because he ended up playing quite a big role in the film. I didn't realise that he plays a CGI rock creature called Korg.
Yes, and he plays him wonderfully, doesn't he?
Yes, and it was a bigger role than I had expected. And that role predates your time in New Zealand, but there was a very, very well-known and successful Māori comedian called Billy T. James.
I'm aware of him,
back in the day, the 70s we're talking about.
Yes.
And he mastered that sort of a Māori take on not taking yourself too seriously. And when I was watching Waititi play this Korg character, I felt at times he was almost channeling that type of irreverence. And I think that would go down very, very well here in New Zealand for sure. Just about everyone gets into it. It's almost like slapstick, isn't it? There's people falling over and knocking themselves out and stumbling and whatever. You know, it's just nonstop.
There are moments when there are laugh out loud things happening in the middle of what should be, you know, by rights, if you follow the traditions of this kind of film, a very intense and very earnest and very proper film. There's people doing outrageously funny things. They're saying very silly things. As you say, Waititi's character, Korg, is played straight for laughs and done very deadpan with it.
Very deadpan.
And it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's got Jeff Goldblum having more fun than I've seen Jeff Goldblum have in any film playing, let's be fair, Jeff Goldblum.
Yes, that's right.
Because that's who he always plays.
Yeah, that's right.
But you can tell he was having a blast in this film. He was having more fun than any man should be allowed to have in a film.
Yeah. Now, there's lots of I thought Chris Hemsworth, who plays Thor, really seemed to accept and enjoy the idea of hamming it up, if you will. There's a lovely little riffing between him and Benedict Cumberbatch early on, Cumberbatch playing Doctor Strange. I thought that was a nice little sort of verbal jousting there.
Yes, that was very, very good.
A number of characters. Tessa Thompson plays this sort of warrior woman called Valkyrie. And she has a lovely entrance. If you remember, she steps out of her spaceship to walk down like the gangplank, and something happens, which was just pure slapstick, but was just a wonderfully timed little bit of comedy. I thought, even though Cate Blanchett is the villainess, Hela, the goddess of death, it's a serious villainess, but she too, there was something about the way she did that. You could tell she was just having a bit of a laugh. And so same with Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner. I think everyone seemed to be in on it.
Yes.
I think there was one exception to that, Steve, about this whole, in the list, a big list of actors taking part in this film. And that was the New Zealand actor, Carl Urban, who played a evil sidekick, if you like, to Hela. He played a character called Scourge. I thought mostly he was serious through the film, but that was like a little counterpoint. I didn't mind that. And he didn't do much talking. Most of his seriousness was just portrayed in the emotions he was dealing with, as we saw in his face, having to come to terms with being side by side with the wicked witch, if you like, of Hela. We haven't talked much about the story, but I don't think we have to, do we, Steve? It's another big sprawling space saga. Thor, if you've seen any articles about it or seen some trailers, he ends up being banished to this far off planet where the Grand Master, this is Jeff Goldblum, conducts like a gladiatorial tournament. He meets the Hulk. How did he get there? Well, that's another story. And basically what happens between those two is a lovely relationship in the story. They join forces later on to confront Hela. I don't know if we have to say much more than that, but it's a bit of a hoot. I think that there are some surprise little appearances by one or two actors. Sam Neill pops up. I didn't expect to see him.
Yeah, I was very proud of myself. I recognised the voice as soon as I heard it.
And then the actor who was in that same little scene with Sam Neill looking, if you recall, with the black hair, he was playing Loki. That was a surprise to see him. I'm not going to name him just so I don't spoil the surprise.
Yes.
But, I think that there were a couple of weak points to me. Before I keep blabbering on, anything you'd like to else to add about strengths or weaknesses?
Well, I mean, to be fair, we could riff on this pretty much all day, couldn't we? To be absolutely honest. I mean, the story, is obviously A, bonkers, and B, secondary. We've got fantastic actors having great fun. We've got an amazing director who has brought personality to it. One thing that I really liked, I thought really worked well, was the fact that typically in a film like this, and I mean, the Lord of the Rings films, and especially the last Hobbit film, were the absolute nadir of this, is everything's building up to a great big fight, and you look at your watch and you think, oh Lord, we're 45 minutes from the end and the fight's starting. I know what the rest of this film is going to be.
Yes.
There were maybe two fight sequences in this film, and neither one of them I didn't feel outstayed its welcome. They were ploughed through fairly quickly. They were disposed of without dragging on, which they have the potential to do horrendously. And as a result, it felt tight. It's a two-hour film. It's a long film, but it never sagged. I thought it held up really, really well.
Okay. I'm actually... stand by. I'm actually going to take issue with you on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I am. Just a little bit, though. I thought the first half moved really, really well and was very well constructed. I did actually think there's a scene in the second part of the film where they escape the Grandmaster's planet, and there's a rocket ship chase and an aerial fighting and
yes, I remember
combat. Now, that type of sequence has been seen in just many of the Marvel movies, certainly the Avengers movies and Captain America movies. And I kind of felt that I did have a little been there, done that feeling for that sequence. I didn't think it was, and I think there was a bit of a build up leading up to that where they're wandering around the marketplace and or there's a festival or carnival going on and everyone's dressed in green and there's a bit of banter. I thought that dragged a little bit for me. I'm being very picky here to say this. But I thought that, A couple of things didn't quite work for me, Steve. There's a big name actor in Idris Elba in this film. He plays Heimdall.
Yes.
I thought he was a bit lost in the story. I didn't find I just didn't attach much to his goings on in the story.
Really know what he was there for, to be honest. I mean, he was obviously, he's a big name and he's got to be there because he's part of the universe. Yeah. But what was he there for? I mean, they made more of Doctor Strange, who was not an integral part of the film.
Yeah, so the character that Idris Elba plays has been in the other four films. He plays like the guy who's the guardian or the gatekeeper of Asgard, and he allows people to come in and across that big Bifrost rainbow bridge. It's a significant character. But anyway, I just thought the character didn't go so far. The other aspect that I'm getting a little bit tired of, to be honest with you, is the way that the other central character, Loki, as played by Tom Hiddleston, the British actor, is portrayed in these films. He's been around since the first Thor film. This is the fourth Marvel film Loki's been in.
Yes.
He is kind of basically a bad guy, but I think Marvel is trying to make him a bit of a good guy. And there's that sort of will he, won't he be good or bad? And that's been running through all those appearances so far. I'm getting a bit tired of that particular dynamic. Thor almost did make a joke of it in this particular movie near the end, and that was well done. But by that point, I feel like they need to say, right, we're going to make up our minds on this one. Either he's going to stay bad or he's going to be turn the over a new leaf and be a good guy. But I just find that sort of constant willy won't he is getting a little bit lame at the moment
I don't think they could decide, given that he is clearly a superhero or he's superhero adjacent at the very least.
Adjacent.
How can he truly be a villain?
Yeah.
They can't quite bring themselves to do it, even if that's what the narrative is crying out for.
They can't quite do it, can they? Yeah. I mean, these aren't big, big criticisms. I really thought it was an extremely enjoyable film. Some really good visuals. I mean, you mentioned the fight scenes. I thought the way Waititi directed the fight scenes was really, really nice.
Yes,
he's got a really
good,
nice eye for a shot. The script, I'm not sure how much of the writing he did, but the script generally just crackles along. There's some nice banter.
Well, it's worth mentioning, incidentally, that he does have a writing credit, but apparently There was a lot of improvisation done in that.
Yes,
And I wouldn't be surprised. Just listening to the way his lines were delivered, I would suspect that a lot of Korg's lines were not as scripted as they might have been. It just felt a little bit too sparky. It was It was very, very tightly done.
And last but not least, I feel we must mention the double use of a wonderful Led Zeppelin song, Immigrant Song, to accompany two big fight scenes. And I thought that song worked a treat.
Didn't it just? Yes. It's not a film you often, not a song you often see in films like this, but.
No, it just.
Used well, used very well.
Yeah. So I think that Mr. Waititi's got a very good reason to be pretty proud of the effort here. I think it's, I hope it does well around the world. I mean, obviously we're going to, most New Zealanders I think would enjoy it. I would say it's definitely worth spending the price of a ticket. And I actually spent a little bit more, Stephen, but managed to get along and see it on the big IMAX screen in Central Auckland. Fantastic. Very, very good.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, I mean, I realize they're not so readily available around the country, but if you have got the opportunity, it is one of those sort of films that would seem even better in front of a massive screen.
Absolutely. So I think we've answered the question there. Buy a ticket. Go and see it. It really is genuinely good, isn't it?
It's a load of fun. And what more can you ask for?
Absolutely. Now, speaking of fun.
Yes.
Alice Cooper is, depending on where you look around the internet, either 68 or 69 years old. This is the day you're doing too much research for your podcast. At any rate, I mean, you can see this. I've got photos I took at the concert online at cravepodcast.com. And yes. And I was right up in front, and I could see, I mean, the man's got a wattle like an elderly turkey on him. The years have not been kind to Mr. Furnier. But you're not just there for what he looks like. What was the concert like, Simon?
Well, I thought it was good, and I say good like that. And I went along, Steve, not having a huge buy-in to Mr. Alice Cooper. Obviously, very aware of him, very aware of the big hits that I've heard on the radio growing up, aware of seeing some videos and aware of how his theatrical horror sort of persona, but not someone who'd followed him in any great extent. So I was there as a bit of my rock education, is how I'd like to think of it.
What a great way of putting it.
Yes, and so, and I felt that to begin with, I felt he was holding back a little bit at the beginning. And you were at there at the beginning. I mean, he certainly walked out in his full regalia and he was twirling that massive baton and he had his hat on and he was sort of almost standing there very square-shouldered and saying to the audience, right, folks, here I am. This is me. I'm here to do the business. And the voice was good. I thought he still had that raspy rock voice, maybe not belting it out as much as his youth, but still and well supported by his band. The voice was good. But for me, it was a bit of a slow burn. I think that the first clutch of songs were performed pretty much just with the band going full out and not too much else in the terms of theatrics. But Steve, as we got into the second half, that's when we started to see more of the sort of the rock nightmare, the props, you know, the rag doll being tossed around the stage, the guillotine, the Frankenstein monster, all that sort of stuff. And it was, I guess that's what why a lot of people were there, just experience that whole, oeuvre of what he has to offer. I actually quite like that, but I just thought, I just enjoyed the fact that this is a guy who knows where his knitting is. He's still doing it. He's got a very good young band.
Yes.
And it's not my chosen genre of rock, but you couldn't help as it went along, be swept up in it, because I think the band were into it, he was into it, and when you've got those two things working and most of the people around you are into it, how can you not be into it yourself? And that's what happened. I got caught up in it. I enjoyed it more and more as the show went on, and by the end of it, I thought, I'm really glad I've seen this guy. Well, you were there not quite as long, but what had you seen him before that night?
No, I hadn't. I'm obviously very aware of him, as you are. You know, you're familiar with the shtick of the of the schlock horror stuff at the end, and yeah, as tends to be the case when you're photographing shows like this. We actually got four songs to shoot instead of three, which is unusual. But right. Yeah, they kick us out after the first four songs, just so we don't disturb the punters any longer.
I thought he's
done. I mentioned this about Adam Ant a couple of weeks ago. He's done the smart thing of making sure that he's got a young audience around, a young band him. I think that's a really smart move for someone like him, because he is old. And if he had his original band, then you just have a bunch of old men on stage. And I don't know how well that would have worked, but he's got a very young, very, very vital band with him.
And
I thought he was a lot more present on the stage than his opening act was.
Oh, well, that wouldn't have been hard.
No.
Yes, we should mention. I was going to mention that. I have to mention it. That was Ace Frehley. Is that how you say his name? Frehley.
I've heard, but go either way.
So he was the lead guitarist with Kiss back in the day, the same sort of generation as Alice Cooper.
Yes, absolutely.
And I know that he has got a very strong reputation as a lead guitarist in that heavy metal, heavy rock type.
Yes.
Category, and there's no doubt this guy can play guitar, but I have to say that was one of the most underwhelming sets I've seen in some time. He also had a younger band, actually, Steve, but it didn't work. The reason was I just thought Frehley was, to me anyway, going through the motions. Look, that's how it came across to me. The band was trying to get the audience going, but the audience could see what the lead guy was doing, and they just weren't buying into it. That's how I took it anyway.
No, it just wasn't quite there. I mean, I we shouldn't focus on the appearance, but he just looked doughy, and the entire thing felt that was the entire impression I got from the entire show was he just felt lumpen and tired. It just, I mean, like you say, this is the guitarist from Kiss, a truly great band. And yet, no, it was disappointing. It really was. It was a shame, really, because he should have been. He should have been a whole lot better. I mean, next time, I think, if we're going to go and see a show like this again, skip the support act. Just go for it.
Yeah, that's right. And I agree with you about the young band, the Cooper's young band. They moved around the stage. They were given a bit of time in the spotlight. I thought Cooper was quite clever to absent himself every now and then to allow... There's a wonderful solo by the drummer who'd absolutely nailed it for a solo that went on for felt like ages. I thought that and then there was also a very striking young blonde, long blonde haired woman, Nita Strauss, who also took a lot of center stage. Glenn Sobel was the drummer. That was the name I was looking for. Glenn Sobel. So Cooper would step back every now and then come back in to take center stage. I think that was quite clever. Maybe it was partly conserving his energy as well. I don't know. But it just kind of drew it out nicely. And when the big hits did come along, like No More Mr. Nice Guy and Poison, and of course he ended with Schools Out, he had the audience on the, what's the expression?
In the palm of his hand.
In the palm of his hand. That'll do just nicely. So I think... I don't know how much longer he could sustain this for. I felt like this was probably near the end of his run. I don't want to be too critical of him, but I'm glad I saw him. And actually, I'm just looking now, Steve, at your photos, and I noticed it before, but I'm looking again. What did you describe that? His neck, the turkey look.
The wattle of a particularly elderly turkey.
Yeah. You must go on craigpodcast.com and have a look at Steve's photos. There's a really good selection up close of Mr. Alice Cooper in action. It's worth a look, that's for sure.
You're very kind.
I'm
Where are we? We so actually, we're just talking about Cooper, Steve. He is, you know, like him or not, you'd accept him, wouldn't you, as one of the acts of the 70s, surely. He fills a niche. Absolutely. There's another band who we made an appearance in that film we were just talking about, Thor Ragnarok, and that was, of course, Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
Very well used in the film. And the lead vocalist from that group, Robert Plant, has, just as it happens, I don't know if this is coincidence or not, just as the film comes out, he's releasing a new album called Carry Fire.
Yes.
Steve, it's taken me a few listenings to get my head around this one. I've divided it into two halves for me anyway. The first half, well produced, but a little bit slightly didn't grab me by the short and curlies, if I can say that on a podcast. But the second half of the album, I really, really liked. So I kind of divided in two. How about you?
Yeah, I think we have to accept that Robert Plant, he is, as you say, he belongs in the pantheon of rock greats. He is a unique musical presence, and one of the truly great voices of all time. And we're assuming he doesn't need the money, so he can do whatever he damn well wants at this stage. And I got the sense listening to Carry Fire, I heard the sound of a singer who is making an album not for you or for me or for his fans. He was making this because this is the album he wanted to make, and I heard. And I don't mean that in a self-indulgent way. I mean that you know, he simply is now just making music that he chooses to make.
Yeah.
And he felt like a very personal album.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. I think that the reason I divided it in two, and it comes back to in a way to the voice that you just mentioned, Steve, because I know you shouldn't treat a new work by a longtime artist and reference his early work, because you've got to treat it in its own right. But it's very hard to emotionally. And I found in those first few songs, the May Queen, New World, Season Song, his voice, he's got a very sweet, effortless almost voice. It's extremely melodious. It's beautiful to listen to, but in those first clutch of songs, that's the second time I've used clutch. It's third. He didn't really push the voice at all. It's just kind of easily taking you through the song. It's lovely, but it's not. It wasn't doing for me what I wanted the Robert Plant voice to do. This moment comes back to what you're saying about he's doing it for him. But later in the album, around about Carry Fire, Bones of Saints, Keep It Hid, we start to hear him expressing himself a little more volubly. There's a bit more of that Robert Plant of old that starts to creep in, not in a massive, massive way, but I started to really, and those songs are a bit more hip, the beat is stronger and faster. And I started to really buy into it in the second half more so than the first. And that might be just, we all take our own prejudices into these things, don't we? But I was starting to hear the Robert Plant I wanted to hear in that second part of the album.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. There's definitely restraint in the first half. He doesn't let go. I mean, you think this is the man who, you know, if you're going back to Whole Lot of Love, he basically sang an orgasm. He has one of the great voices of all time.
Yeah, he does. He just does.
Yeah. But he's not, but, you know, he's now, I mean, he's in his 60s, isn't he?
Yes.
You can't expect him still to be doing the same thing he was doing. I mean, the thing is, right, he's onto a hiding to nothing. If he does the same thing he's always done, then he's boring and he's unoriginal and he's got nothing new. If he does something new, then, well, he's not doing the same stuff he always used to do, is he? He can't win. And I don't think he cares anymore.
I agree. And nor should he care.
No, because let's face it, he is Robert Bloody Plant.
I've just done a quick check. He's 69.
It was close. There you go. It's not bad. But you can hear in the music. I mean, you know, just as soon as you put the record on, he starts singing May Queen. That song could have been on Led Zeppelin 3.
Yes, it could. I know. I was thinking. In fact, isn't the May Queen makes an appearance in Stairway to Heaven, doesn't she?
There's a spring clean for her, yes.
The spring clean for the May Queen, yeah. So, you're right. Absolutely.
So there's no denying that this record belongs in the tradition of the great Robert Plant. I would suggest way more so we're going back about 3 years now to a recent album called Lullaby and the Ceaseless Roar, on which he droned.
Okay, yeah, I heard that one didn't go down so well. I've got another couple just preceding that one, Band of Joy, I think, was one he did.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was very good.
I really enjoyed that. And I even quite enjoyed his collaboration with the country singer,
Alison Krauss.
Alison Krauss, beg your pardon. Yeah, there's some nice songs there too. Anyway, it's interesting you say that, Steve. I remember going to see him in Auckland. He was here about 4 or 5 years ago with the Shapeshifters.
Oh, yeah.
And at what was then the Vector Arena. I swear 80% of the people who walked in were wearing Led Zeppelin T-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, and you could just sense a feeling of disappointment that although he played a lot of Led Zeppelin songs, he did not play them the way Led Zeppelin played them. He reinterpreted them. And as you say, he's doing it for himself to keep it fresh for him. But sometimes that's hard for the older audience to get their head around.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, like, he's put out another record. He clearly is very proud of it. I tell you, I wish I could sing that well.
Oh, I just want to mention, I don't know from the notes on the album what the instrument was, but the title track, Carry Fire,
yeah,
it's got a wonderful sort of Arabic or Middle Eastern sort of guitar instrument.
Ooh, I didn't pick that one out.
I don't know. I just, well, to me, that might be just my funny sense of instruments. Anyway, it's driven by this guitar, and it's fantastic. I think it's a great, great track. I thought Bones of Saints also was really, really strong. I mean, I'd buy the album just to hear those two or three songs. And he kind of has developed a bit of a world music sort of shtick, hasn't he? Sort of different drum beats and...
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's to the fore here as well. So I would, overall, I'm liking it more each time I listen to it. One or two songs, the slower songs, don't quite do it for me, but overall, I would recommend it. He's still got a lot to offer, and... When he does let go, as we hear a little bit of in this album, he's still got it.
He has indeed, hasn't he?
So, Steve, Mr. Plant, I don't know if he's going to come back to these shores, but there's lots of other people coming up to visit us in the not-too-distant future.
There are indeed. There's been a clutch of announcements since last we spoke.
Yes.
Are you familiar with a British comedian called Jimmy Carr?
I am, yes. He's got a particularly lewd sense of humour.
Oh, he's foul, filthy, but he's still quite funny.
He's funny, yes, I know.
And he's announced his The Best Of Ultimate Gold Greatest Hits World Tour. And he's doing decent selection, actually. Auckland, Hamilton, New Plymouth, Wellington, Napier, Christchurch, Dunedin. He's doing, you know, the length and breadth of.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be, he's announcing more dates all the time. He's going to be here in January. He's going to be worth a look. I'm not going to trot through all the dates because it'd be so much easier just to send people to cravepodcast.com, quite frankly.
I agree.
Go ahead.
Just to add that Jimmy Carr, I've seen a few clips of him on the internet, and he's particularly adept and seems to relish the opportunity to take on hecklers.
I wouldn't mess with him.
No, and he loves jousting with hecklers, and he invariably wins, of course.
Yes.
So New Zealanders, take him on at your peril, I suggest. Although it could make for a lovely night out.
It could, but I'm keeping my, if I get tickets for that one, I'm keeping my mouth shut. another act I wouldn't take on, but for different reasons. Do you know the Stiff Little Fingers?
The name, yes, but I couldn't give you a rundown of their songs at all, but I know we're talking the punk era, aren't we?
Yeah, Belfast punks from. Okay. Well, they're actually doing what they're calling the 40th anniversary, give or take a year tour. and they're
what a great title!
It's cracking, isn't it? And so they're going to be in New Zealand in February, doing Wellington, Christchurch, in Auckland toward the end of February, early March. Again, dates are on the website. That one could be worth a look. The Auckland City Limits Festival is coming back.
Right.
It was in abeyance for a couple of years, and it's going to be headlined this year by Beck and by Grace Jones.
Oh!
Yeah, there's a name we've not heard for a year or two.
There's been a bit written about her lately. I guess she's on a tour right now, and I've come across some very, very positive reviews of her show still. I don't know how old she is, but that, you know, that could be really worth seeing. Okay. Well,
that's going to be March the 3rd at Western Springs Stadium and Park. There's a lot of acts playing there. So that one's worth looking into. Kiwi bands like Catch a Fire are going to be there, but also the Libertines. From Britain, you know, Tash Sultana is playing, Pinky Duck from Australia, Justice, Phoenix. It's a big lineup. That's going to be a very, very impressive day out, I think.
Wow. I'm just going to... Wow. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah?
Would you believe that Robert Plant was born in August 1948, so he was 69, and Grace Jones is born in May 1948, so she's 69.
Oh, wow.
What is it about 1948?
It was a good year for music, clearly.
I think Prince Charles was born in 1948.
If you could explain what that's got to do with music, Simon, you're a better man than I am.
It's got absolutely nothing.
Just checking.
I don't know why I said it.
No, but you know, you're still holding out for that Knighthood one day, aren't you?
Oh, that's what it is. Damn. He listens to Crave Podcast, you know.
Well, everyone does. All the best people do.
Anyway, diverted you. I do apologise.
Well, I don't know if Pink listens to Crave Podcast.
But she should.
Well, she should, because we're going to be talking about her. She's coming in September next year, and she's announced a fourth show at Spark Arena.
Okay, pretty good.
Which is pretty impressive, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, four, that's good. Yeah.
Now, here's a name you may have heard, a British singer. Are you familiar with Rag & Bone Man?
Well, not really. I'm showing my ignorance here, but no, I don't think I can say I am.
He's new. Put it this way, the press release that came out today describes him as 2017's biggest breakthrough artist. I don't think that's completely unfair.
Well, Rag and Bone Man, that's a good
Rag and Bone Man is his name. Okay. And he had a big hit this year with a song called Human, which, track it down. You have heard it on the radio. I know you have. he has a remarkable, powerfully rich soul voice.
Okay.
Now, he's bringing the whole band. He's doing a full band show. He's playing Spark Arena. I would have thought he was... I wouldn't have thought his style would suit an arena, but that's where they're playing because that's how big he is now.
Oh, okay.
He's also doing the TSB Arena in Wellington and the Horncastle in Christchurch, so he's going to be big.
Which month are we talking about for him?
This is early April next year.
Early April, okay.
That's going to be worth a look. Right. I'd say a phenomenal voice and really rich. Rich music, absolutely lovely, worth a look.
Okay, very good.
And one last one I want to mention. This is one that I personally will be going to. Believe it or not, there are other podcasts.
No.
I know, it's hard to imagine. And my personal favourite other podcast is a British one called No Such Thing as a Fish.
Okay, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Are you familiar with QI, the British...
Yes, I am. Stephen...
Fry.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So now Sandy Toksvig fronts it now.
Okay.
She's doing the back half of the alphabet, and the QI elves, the researchers who pull together all those incredible facts for QI, do a podcast.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And it's the four who do it are the four chief researchers for the TV show.
Okay. Yep.
And they just, as they put it, sit around a microphone talking about their four favorite facts of the week. And it's extraordinarily entertaining.
Okay.
And so they're bringing a live show to New Zealand next year.
Oh.
They're doing...
How that's going to work?
Oh, well, I've heard their live recordings from the UK. It's basically just record their podcast in front of an audience.
Okay.
And they're very funny.
All right.
Yeah. They're going to be in the Bruce Mason Centre in Takapuna.
I think that sounds rather intriguing. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No. I think we should be there. I think it does sound brilliant. That's going to be the 19th of May next year, and they're also going to be in Wellington as well. I don't have the information about that in front of me, but that's definitely going to be worth a look.
Okay, good stuff. Wow.
And now I'm going to expect a plug for our podcast from them, but I'm sure we won't get it.
Well, you never know.
We'll see.
Do we know? We'll see.
We'll see. I'm going with no. I just have this sneaking suspicion. But wait, we'll put it out there.
I'm prepared to be surprised, pleasantly surprised. Anyway, look, I think we've done our dash here. Thank you for that roundup. Just to say that we'd like to hear from you. We do occasionally hear from you, so please do continue to do that. You can email us. That's one way of getting in touch with Steve and I. The email address is simply podcast@cravepodcast.com.
We're on Facebook, of course, or Twitter. You can find us at Crave Podcast.
You can. So, I'm Simon Mercier.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Outstanding.
Very good.
Well, that went about as well as could be expected.
Good.